Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy
way. Welcome, this is Eric. This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about another recent movie, 2019's Rocket Man.
Yeah, we are.
Directed by...
No idea.
I didn't write it down. But he's the same guy who directed Bohemian Rhapsody.
No.
Yes. Well, no. He kind of took over for Bohemian Rhapsody after Bryan Singer got fired.
Yeah, there's no way.
Same main guy.
Same credit, maybe.
Yeah. So, anyway, Drew, you've been aching to talk about this movie. Itching.
I have.
Busting at the seams.
All of it. Yeah, this movie really surprised me. I'm really interested to hear what you guys thought about it.
Well, before we get into it, we all grew up in the same house, so we all listened to... Well, we were all exposed to a lot of Elton John.
A lot.
Yeah.
And since I've heard the song Philadelphia Freedom in the basement of our parents' house a billion times while playing pool.
Oh, yeah. The Bitch is Back?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We listened to Elton John so much that I liked it. I liked Elton John. But man, by the time I was an adult, I was kind of burned out on Elton John. And I also kind of came of age around the Lion King time too, so he was everywhere. But I for most of my adulthood, I just have stopped listening to him. Just because I listened to him so much, I never had to seek it out. So I had forgotten by the time I watched this movie just how catchy a lot of his songs are.
There's solid songs in there. And he has such a large catalog anyway that, again, a lot of the later stuff is more, ballads and toned down kind of Elton John. But the early stuff was, pretty rockin'. Pretty out there.
Mm-hmm.
Brother Jay, were you a fan of Elton John?
I was a quasi fan of Elton John, and I kind of felt it would falter. So ups and downs, I would say. There's some albums I like and some that I just, that whole Lion King foray, I just never hit my wheelhouse. So I don't begrudge people that really love Elton John and the Lion King, but just not my, I don't know. It's like chewing on tinfoil. It just was painful.
Well, that was the AOR version of Elton John.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I guess that's why they call it the blues. You know, it seemed it was clearly him, but it wasn't really
like Genie.
Yeah. So.
I like that's why they call it the blues.
Oh, yeah. No, me too. I mean, it's funny because the Elton John and the Lion King is fine, but I just assume he's in the same category as Randy Newman, right, in all of his film scores. But young Elton John is a whole different thing.
Very much so. Well, also because he's coked out.
Yeah, maybe, but still.
Now, I have to say, in full disclosure, a number of years ago, the parents and I went and saw Elton John in Vegas.
Oh, okay.
And it was just him and a piano on stage for, probably 90 minutes, maybe a little longer. The man didn't, there was nobody else on stage with him, and he didn't take a break. Now, clearly, some of the songs were in a little different register than they used to be. So his voice is clearly not what it once was, which I can also identify with in my own life. So I totally understand that. I don't hold that against him. But I have to say, I was impressed and amazed and kind of awestruck at how good he still is. And amazed that he could put himself through that kind of performance. So so it was interesting to come back to this and kind of see this. I unfortunately think that watching yesterday before this did a great disservice to this.
You think?
I think so.
About what year was it that you saw him in Vegas?
Oh, God. 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay. I actually saw him in like 95. I saw him and Billy Joel on their Piano Man tour.
Oh, you bastard.
They were great. They were fantastic. Yeah. But it was just both of them and pianos. I don't know that they had any.
Why would you need anything else?
Turns out you didn't.
Yeah.
Which is sort of why when we're watching this movie, I'm like, oh yeah, he did have a backup band, didn't he? Somebody does play guitar in that one song. So, Drew, you can guide us in. When did you see this movie first? And obviously you loved it. What did you think? And what did you think of it seeing it this week, if you saw it this week?
I did. I watched it again. I saw this a few months ago. I would actually probably have to consult my Letterboxd account to figure out exactly when. But I watched Bohemian Rhapsody. Bohemian Rhapsody came on one of the cable channels I have. I guess one of the streaming channels I have. So I watched it and I thought it was fine. It was just really standard and basic, but it had good music going for it. And then Rocket Man came out on video and I got it in the mail and I watched it and I had no idea what I was getting into. I was assuming it was just another standard biopic like Bohemian Rhapsody was. So within probably the first, 4 minutes, I stopped the movie because I decided I had to make my wife watch it with me. So then we watched it together. And I was truly blown away just by the sheer creativity of the movie and how they repackaged his music and used it in creative ways. Because the plot itself, the story of his life is, while his music is very unique, his story is not all that unique. You know, the story of an artist who has trouble childhood, trouble coping with fame, self-medicates, either redeems himself or doesn't. In this case, he kind of does. That's really standard and basic. But what they did with his music and how they told the story and the performances was just absolutely bonkers. And the fact that that the actor who plays him re-recorded all of the songs and sang himself was amazing. And it still makes me mad that Rami Malek won an Oscar for wearing ugly teeth, essentially.
And Taron Egerton is not nominated at all.
No.
And really, he's a white guy.
Yeah.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. This year's Oscar nominees are not very diverse.
Kind of like the Democratic platform.
One might say. Anyway, so we'll deal with that in housekeeping if you want to.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. No. I've got thoughts too on that. We live in interesting times, you got to admit.
So maybe my experience watching Rocket Man the first time, I had better groundwork because I watched a crappy version of it with good music, but probably inferior music overall to the music in Rocket Man and Bohemian Rhapsody, whereas you guys watched yesterday and then followed up with Rocket Man. But I also watched it again this time, and I liked it even more. I could kind of relax and go with the flow because I knew what to expect this time. I really got to appreciate some of the performances, not just Taron Egerton's, but Jamie Bell's performance is just out of this world. He is so amazing as kind of the, I mean, he's the reaction shot dude. He's one of the people that really has to sell it in this movie for Taron Egerton, and he does. And Richard Madden, he is the devil. Like, a way more sinister version of Kate McKinnon. And watching it over again, you can tell from the very first scene he's in that he is playing the devil all the way through. Sort of like Kate McKinnon, but not as overt.
Well, while I'm thinking about it, so I haven't seen Bohemian Rhapsody yet, but so Richard Madden was in the Game of Thrones, playing mm-hmm. a good guy kind of, and he plays mm-hmm. John Reed in this movie as a bad guy.
But he also played a good guy in the series The Bodyguard.
Mm-hmm. But John Reed is also a character in the Bohemian Rhapsody story. In fact, these movies they thought about like having cameo appearances from each other. But the thing is, John Reed in the other movie is played by another actor from Game of Thrones who is a bad guy in Game of Thrones, but plays a relatively good guy in Bohemian Rhapsody.
Mm-hmm. Aidan Gillen, I think.
I think so, yeah. So it's interesting to see a movie that has two same historical characters portrayed in very different lights.
Have either of you seen Bohemian Rhapsody?
I have not.
No.
I feel like there's a commercial out right now with raccoons where they're eating garbage. and one of them is like, oh, this is terrible. You got to taste it. Yeah. That's kind of how I feel about Bohemian Rhapsody. Like, it is a steaming pile of garbage. But you should watch it just so you can see the bad version of Rocketman and see why I was so passionate about it after I watched them almost back to back.
Yeah, well, because you said, I was talking about two movies I hadn't seen at that point, Rocketman and Bohemian Rhapsody. I was talking about the reactions they were getting from people I work with as well as other podcasters. And a lot of people said that they enjoyed Bohemian Rhapsody because it was a pretty straight told story. And, most of them.
Yeah, actually. Yeah. Well, that's a fair assessment of Bohemian Rhapsody.
And most of them didn't know quite what to make of Rocketman, so they were disappointed in contrast. And Drew, your instant reaction was, oh no, once I found out they could make a movie like Rocketman, I can't believe they didn't make that kind of movie with Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, but I've talked too much. What did you guys think?
Yeah, Jason, let's get...
I was not a big fan of this movie. I think Yesterday maybe did a disservice because I... And even though you attempted to lower expectations last week, my problem is that... So the first thing was the little kid singing. That immediately was like minus 10 points right there. I don't want to hear some little kid singing. Like, I don't watch Star Search. I don't watch America's Got Talent. I don't watch all those like worst. I don't watch any of those. I can't stand to hear bad people singing and having a little kid like try and sing and try and be cutesy. And then the whole family starts singing. I'm like, I'm not seeing West Side Story. I'm not watching a movie about everybody else. I don't want to hear everybody else singing. I didn't come for a musical. I came for a biopic that had music in it. And so I had a really hard time.
Yeah, that is not what this movie was.
No, I know. I'm aware because I sat through all of it. Plus, the music wasn't even in the right order. So
the songs people talked about that.
Yeah, chronologically, the songs are not chronological. I mean, I get it. It's creative license. That's fine. But also, they left you parts of his life completely out. They just glossed over parts of it. So I understand what they were trying to do. And I don't think it's an awful, awful movie. But I just didn't really care for it as a whole. It was fine. I thought it was, you know, decently acted. I thought it was well cast. It was well acted. It was well cast and well acted. You know, I don't think Taron Egerton sings as well as Hamish Patel. So, That was a bad comparison. So it was hard for me. And the story just, you're right. The story was familiar enough that I wasn't surprised by any of it. But I do give credit to Jamie Bell and Richard Madden and Taron Egerton, because I think it was fantastically acted. I think they did an incredibly well job. So incredibly good job. I can't even speak tonight.
Hey, that's my job. Don't you take my role.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I would have done a better job going completely blind into this. But I just thought 10 minutes in, I'm like, oh, this is, I might as well just go watch West Side Story.
Yeah. It's funny because I didn't know that either. Even though Drew had said that it was way different. Like it was an interesting way of telling a story. Yeah. Much more interesting than Bohemian Rhapsody or a traditional biopic. So I knew that they were going to do something. I did not realize it was going to be a musical like a la Grease.
Well, and my I think I told boyfriend Jesse my biggest problem with this is to me, my very staunch opinion, which
you're a little judgy.
I'm very nuanced in my opinions, right? Yeah. It was disrespectful to the music, and I don't think that they paid good service to the music in the way they treated it. So I
disagree completely.
Well, and I don't know if this is what you mean, but Elton John was a producer on this movie, maybe executive producer. Like he had a huge part in making this movie.
Sure.
And so he actually told his first pick, by the way, do you know who his first pick was for playing him?
No.
George Michael.
Justin Timberlake. But.
Oh, dear God.
Well, whatever. Anyways, but he told Taron Egerton that you don't want to try to sing it like me. Sing it like you sing it. You know, I mean, you're trying to be me, but you can't, you know, don't try to copy. Give it your own spin, whatever that is. Well, again, much like Hamish Patel did with the Yesterday songs.
Yeah. I don't have any problem with that aspect of it. I just don't think the whole theatricality of adding other people and dancing and action and strange stories. And it's just, it takes away from the music, which is the biggest part of who he is as a person, probably, especially up to that point in his life. And they're not paying it the full gravity I think it needs or deserves.
Well, again, as I was watching it, and I mean, when the first thing when you see him coming through those doors with his big old wings and devil horns and things, which, by the way, I did think that I jotted down that I actually wanted to buy that suit.
I wrote down, I think I found my Halloween costume.
Oh, man. That would be every Halloween, every year, all of the members of my family. But the fact that they tell this story, and I guess I'll start the spoiling here. They start the story with where you see a silhouette of like a devil creature coming in to this room, really angry and really like menacing. And by the end of the story, he strips down little by little all of his costumery. And at the end, he's just a guy named Elton is sitting in a hoodie at his group meeting at the rehab center. And I thought that was clever. And so in the beginning of the movie, he starts to tell his story to the people in his group, right? Because he talks about how he's an alcoholic and a drug addict and a sex addict and a shopping addict. And he's got all those other stuff, bulimic, whatever. Then he goes back to his, or I guess they ask him about his childhood. And all of a sudden you see this little kid played by Matthew Isley, who is Reggie Dwight, who sings The Bitch Is Back with the rest of the people. And I actually really appreciated in that scene, and other scenes do this too, but in that scene to me, I was like, oh, I know what they're doing. Where everybody else in his like little estate or whatever he was living at, his neighbors were all like monotone, pasty white people. I mean, there were like bleached out. There was no color except for the Reggie Dwight character. Like, Elton John always was very flamboyant with color during this movie. And like, especially the English version, everybody is like very dull, very pasty, on purpose, very theatrical, like it was a stage production. This felt very much like seeing a stage production to me.
Yeah, when that whole number started, it was so unexpected to me that it felt like it was an assault on my senses.
Oh yeah, me too.
And I think that is the moment that everybody who's watching this movie is either going to be in or out. And I was 100% in.
You know what? I would say, like, I didn't particularly like the Bitches Back song. I like what they were doing, but I'm like, oh, this might be actually pretty bad. Like, this might be unpleasant to watch. But I think by the time they aged up and you got to hear Saturday Night's All Right for Fightin', I mean, that's great. What they did with that is great, how they aged up. It really did look like a scene from Grease at that point, because he's got the hair and the teenagerness and everything. But I think that worked really well with the song, which I think that's a, what do they call it? That's a, there's a word that kids use today for a good song. Oh,
not halfway.
It's a banger.
Banger, yes, there you go. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a banger. Actually, probably kids 10 years ago said that. I don't know what kids are saying today.
Yes. That might be generous.
Yeah. so yeah. So, I mean, that's a great song. And it's the fact that they drove through time like quickly on that song, I thought was really good. But to go back a little further.
Well, that's how they used a lot of the songs.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
To show the passage of time.
And like Yesterday, it used that the musical montage in a really fun way. But Yesterday was just so much more kooky, because of course it was unexpected. I mean, a lot of the stuff, I mean, obviously it's a biopic at its heart, so it's got to tell roughly the story, right? But I thought that what did you think of Bryce Dallas Howard as his mom and Stephen McIntosh as his dad?
I thought they were both really good and so hateable.
Yeah, for different reasons. Yeah,
worst.
Me too.
Yeah, they were the worst, but really good performances. His dad was a psycho.
Oh, yeah.
I cannot imagine his parents were happy about this movie.
Are his parents still alive?
I don't know.
I'm going to guess they're in the cold, cold ground. Because he's not a young man. By the way, we know his dad, Stephen McIntosh, from the Muppet Christmas Carol.
Yes.
A lot of these people, except for Bryce Dallas Howard, a lot of these folks, we haven't really seen very many movies of them, with them in it, talked about them. I mean, the other one is, let's see. Yeah, actually, maybe that's it for folks that we have already talked about. Oh, no, sorry. Tate Donovan, who played the original club manager, Doug Weston. He was in Argo. Oh, and Dick James, Stephen Graham, was from Snatch and Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. But pretty
Dick
much...
Dick James from Snatch, that's hilarious.
Well, Stephen Graham is his name, but so, yeah.
Stanley Dwight passed away in 91, and Sheila Eileen Harris died in 2017.
Oh, okay.
Oh, is that why they were making this movie?
She may have been able to see a rough cut.
Yeah.
So Bryce Dallas Howard, obviously from Terminator Salvation, and the best episode, I think, of Black Mirror. I thought she did a really good job. So we got piano lessons. We got 60s. We got Saturday Night's All Right for Fightin'.
Wait, we got When Are You Gonna Hug Me?
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, the thing with about his dad was...
Yeah, his dad was a bastard person.
Yeah.
His dad wanted nothing to do with him or his mother, even though they were married.
Yes. Was not interested in from A to Z.
Zed.
But I actually found the song that they sang as a family to be rather affecting.
Which one was that?
What was that? I Don't Know How to Love song.
Oh, was that written for this movie? There was some original song, I think. I don't know. I don't have it written down either.
I was not familiar with it before this movie.
Again, I'm still yada-yadding a bunch of stuff, but well, you certainly tell me to dive back in. So then we meet, eventually, Bernie Taupin, played by Jamie Bell.
Oh, yeah. You are yada-yadding a huge musical number in Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, we finally get the adult exactly. Elton.
Yeah, because he went from teenage Elton to adult Elton.
Yeah, and even though they gave him like a little gap in his teeth and a unfortunate hairline, and he had a lot of the familiar mannerisms of Elton John, Taron Egerton is still way too good looking.
Oh, and also ripped.
Yeah, he's way too in shape.
Because even if Elton John was at a tip-top shape for the 1970s, his body would not look like Taron Egerton's body.
Right.
Yeah.
So I assume that the song you're referring to is I Want Love.
Yes.
It was written in 2001, released as a single.
Okay.
The Songs from the West Coast album.
I stand corrected. So we get him as, I guess, working with other band members as part of a band, and they do some gigs, and he meets another musician named Wilson, who's basically his black friend that also kisses him.
He ends up getting hired to be the backing band for an American soul group touring.
Yes,
yeah. Touring England. And he gets some advice on how to become a famous musician. Which is very much like Kylo Ren in The Last Jedi. It's essentially kill the past so you can embrace the future.
Well, that was the quote. You got to kill the person that you were born to be in order to become the person you want to be.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of echoed at the end, too, where he really does have to kill the past. He has to, except in this way, in the end, he basically forgives and lets go. Kind of. Anyway, we'll get there, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And what we learned from his childhood is he is like a piano prodigy. He can instantly play anything from ear. By ear, sorry.
Yeah. No, and so he's exceptionally gifted. And actually gets a scholarship to a music academy. Anyway, then he goes out in this rock and roll thing, and he answers an ad from the music executive Ray Williams, played by Charlie Rowe. He plays a little bit of piano, introduces himself as Elton John. But it turns out Ray is not actually the boss of the company. It's really Dick James. And Dick, I kind of like that character.
Yeah. He had some strong opinions.
Well, yeah. Okay, so again, talking about a movie I haven't seen, is the Dick James character the same sort of character as the Mike Myers character in Bohemian Rhapsody?
No. My memory is that the Mike Myers character was more of a sycophant than Dick James was.
Yeah, Dick James was not a sycophant. Yeah. Although Dick James had a good taste when it came to, you know, he knew when the money song started.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, and so then we meet Bernie Taupin, who was hired to write songs and lyrics. He's a lyricist, not a musician. And obviously, Bernie Taupin was involved in this movie as well. I mean, I guess he must have been a producer as well, because I think he and Elton John have been doing all these events together. And ostensibly, the movie is about a friendship between them. Because Bernie is the rock in Elton John's life. Like, Elton John is like an out-of-control person. But Bernie is the friend who never deserts him.
Yeah, I didn't really know their story.
Me either, really.
I actually had in my mind that they were a couple at one point.
Me too.
Apparently not.
I did not know until I looked it up to confirm the facts of this movie that I thought Bernie Taupin was also gay.
Yeah, but what I really appreciated about this movie is they didn't create a conflict between them where there didn't need to be one. Like I kept expecting there to be a turn, and there wasn't. I mean, he was just a good friend the entire way through.
Yeah, and the Elton lashed out, but that's what Elton did because he was all high on the drugs and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Because the movie is essentially him growing up, and then as soon as he becomes an adult and gets over, like, becomes Elton John, that's when he begins to crumble under the weight of being Elton John. Because it would be tough. I mean, you know, they sort of sped through it. Yeah. But, I mean, he suddenly became, like, one of the most both prolific and profitable artists in the 70s and 80s, right?
Mm-hmm.
70s for sure. And you have the fun thing where he's singing with Don't Go Breaking My Heart with Kiki D.
Also a much better looking version of Kiki D.
Yeah, oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's funny because when they, at the end of the movie during the credits, which I watched to the very end, thank you, Jason, Drew too, when they show the pictures like the Taron Egerton version versus the real version, it was interesting because it turns out, you know, I just slipped right into the fact that, yeah, this is just a movie about Elton John. That's what Elton John looks like. You know, probably not, obviously, with the six-pack abs and stuff. Also, I didn't realize that Elton John, I thought he was short. Like, I assumed he was just a short guy. He's not. He's like, I mean, he's slightly taller than I am. And I'm a short guy, but I'm not, like, dwarfish. But maybe it's because he was the pinball wizard in the Who movie, where you've got that weird, you know, first perspective camera thing. I guess he wasn't the pinball wizard. He sang the pinball wizard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's funny. I like a lot of those songs in that musical, but I just bought the Blu-ray of Tommy, figuring
Why?
That, well, so I'm a huge Who fan. Well, sort of, I guess. Yeah, I'm a huge Who fan, but Tommy just never clicked with me. Like Quadrophenia is one of my favorite albums of any kind of album ever.
Go figure.
And but Tommy just didn't do it for me.
We have an episode about Quadrophenia, don't we?
We do. About the movie? Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
No. Yeah, I love the music before I ever saw the movie. I think it's like nearly a perfect like rock opera. It's got themes and all that. It's all very well done. But for me, and Tommy has all that too, but I just think the Tommy story just didn't click with me, and the style of the movie. I still haven't watched the whole thing yet because it was like, oh, I can't watch this. I mean, the Elton John part's great, but the rest of it is hard to watch. I think it suffers from a little bit about being in the Jesus Christ Superstar time. anyway, this is a huge digression. But so for some reason, I thought in my mind that Elton John was real short.
You thought in your mind, where else do you think?
Sometimes out loud.
Everyone's a critic. Okay. I had it in my head that Elton John was a short man, a very tiny man. And I also had it in my head for some reason that Bernie Taupin looked a lot like Gene Siskel. Neither of which is true. So, again, this is actually a sweet story between Elton and Bernie, especially at the end. He was just there. He was just a friend. Mm-hmm. Not a lover. Not a cousin. Like a writing partner for sure, but not a rival. Just, and then of course Elton goes to Mama Cass's house, where Bernie goes off with the exotic lady, and that's where Elton meets music producer John Reed, played by Richard Madden.
And, oh, you just yada-yada'd his amazing performance at the Troubadour.
At the Troubadour, yeah, I'm sorry. Actually, the Troubadour scene, I'm glad you brought us back there, because the Troubadour scene where we meet club manager Doug Weston, played by Tate Donovan from Argo, who also did a good job. It's funny, a lot of, like, the scene at the Troubadour where they arrive at the Troubadour and their people are waiting out front, that's all taken from stock footage from in the 70s, and they just cleaned it up. Because it was way cheaper to do that than it would be to try to stage the Troubadour in the 70s with all the signs and cars and everything. So I thought that was clever. And here, spoiler, I sent you guys a text after I saw this movie saying that after this movie, I don't think I told you I had that verklempt kind of weepy feeling like at the end of yesterday. But I did say that immediately I went to look for the video for I'm Still Standing. Because this movie ends with I'm Still Standing, sort of. And it's obviously like, it's so 80s looking. It's so amazing. I thought, well, this is fantastic. They did a great job with this. I better see. This is probably the real music video. And I'm like, wow, it is. It's almost exact. And then I read later that, yeah, it's almost exact because all I did was CGI Taron Egerton into the video.
That is an amazingly bad video.
Oh, it is! It is the most 80s horrible video. Yeah, for sure.
That had to be the early days of MTV, I assume.
Yeah, it's so 80s. It's so cheesy that it also made me smile.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so sorry, I'm bouncing all around. Yeah, the scene of the troubadour again, where. This is, I think, like the part where I really appreciated like the fantastic elements of this. Like when he's suspended while he's playing the piano and the crowd starts to hover and stuff. I mean, I thought that was pretty effective.
Yeah. And that scene just fucking lands.
Yeah.
I love that scene. I was there with the crowd.
Yep. Also, Crocodile Rock is a great song. And he plays it in a different way. He doesn't play it the way old Elton plays it. And he doesn't quite play it the way young Elton did on the album. Because he starts off... It's just very clever the way they did. They did a lot of different arranging. And that's, I think when... Jason, when you mentioned that you saw Elton John with just the piano. The mm-hmm. fact that he's such a good musician, you know, means he can take his own songs and just rearrange them in a different way to make them, like... a completely different mood or a completely different feeling with the same song. This the song sure. that we all like, the song that we are okay. tapping our toes to can turn into like a, can go from sort of a poppy thing to more of a sort of rich nostalgic treatment. I don't know. I don't have the words to describe it, but I thought it was interesting how they changed up a lot of these songs kind of in the middle. Like they would take a song that, you know, and either start it out with a different arrangement or play with the arrangement during the song as it's played in the movie, as you know, the visuals change as well.
Yeah. So they did Crocodile Rock of the Troubadour, which I loved. And the way they added the fantastic elements to that scene just really brought home the importance and the emotion of that moment. And that's really just a microcosm of why I love this movie. It's because they took the song, they repackaged it a little bit, and they used that scene to tell you a major important part of the story, and they just used the song to show you. They didn't have to spend the time to explain it or have somebody talk about it. There's no. It was all musical exposition, which I loved.
You didn't like the voiceover narration? Like the internal, like ad from Adaptation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Adaptation. That was a great movie. but then you follow up Crocodile Rock.
Wait, hold on. What I meant was that Brian Cox told Nicolas Cage, you don't use voiceover narration because it's cliche and stupid. Mm-hmm. Yes. And this movie took that advice and didn't.
Yes, this movie definitely shows instead of tells. I mean, there's some exposition when he goes back to his therapy, but what's really fun about that is, especially for the first half of the movie, probably when he's giving his exposition, he's an unreliable narrator.
Oh, completely.
He's telling the story that he wants people to think, but to follow up Crocodile Rock with. Tiny Dancer at the party, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when I was actually, before I watched the movie, I was wondering if they were going to have Tiny Dancer in it and how that was going to land, because how can you use Tiny Dancer in a movie after Almost Famous?
Yeah.
but they did. They found a completely different way to use it. They made it such a sad version of that song. Where the Almost Famous scene was was kind of uplifting and it was bringing everybody back together. This one was an exploration of how lonely he felt and how he was feeling separated from his friend. Just, I cannot believe they pulled it off.
And it may have been this movie, actually, where it really hit home that, oh, this could have been actually a song kind of about a real person. Because otherwise, I had never given serious consideration to being fully employed as a seamstress for the band. But if you work for Elton John's band, shit, you were your team of dozen seamstresses. They call them seamsters if they're a tailor, I guess, would be a male. I don't know how this works.
No, I like seamster.
Time's up. Brother Jay, have we lost you for good?
No.
I'm hated listening. This movie, didn't you?
I didn't hate it. I didn't enjoy it. I don't think it was awful. It just wasn't, I don't know.
Well, so Elton ends up finding true love, sort of. Or at least he finds his, he can accept his sexuality, I guess, with John Reed, the devil. Because the devil is always attractive. By the way, the real John Reed.
He's very dashing in this movie.
Oh, he is. Oh, actually, in real life, if you've seen, well, they showed pictures, I think, at the end of this movie, but John Reed was actually a very short guy. I think he was like 5'4". So Elton sort of towers over John Reed, which is not the case in this movie. But yeah, that's fine. I hear a rumor that in Bohemian Rhapsody, they gave Freddie Mercury AIDS 2 years earlier because it worked better for the story.
I don't know that that's true, but I believe it.
Yeah, because I think the idea... I don't think he knew he had AIDS when he was performing at Live Aid. I could be wrong. When we do our Bohemian Rhapsody episode. Episode 526, if you want to mark your calendars.
Can't wait.
You know what? Okay, let's... while we do tangents here... So, Uncle John, listener Uncle John, gave me a... the Queen Jazz Album. Okay. Have you familiar with the Queen's Jazz Album?
Oh, yes.
It has Bicycle Races. It has Fat Bottom Girls. What else does it have on it? But it's, I think there's a song called like either Mustafa. And I just assumed it was Arabic because it starts out with kind of a, what sounds like a call to prayer, like an Islamic call to prayer. And then Freddie Mercury is singing all this stuff and it's all, you know. Turns out, he is not singing, or it's not Arabic, it's just a bunch of words that sound sort of like Eastern-y. Anyway, so it turns out, looking for the lyrics of that song, to sing along with it, for instance, as I was trying to want to do, to look at album art and look at lyrics. Yeah, the lyrics don't make any sense. So, anyway, I mean, I guess the song Bohemian Rhapsody also is sort of like that, where he's just singing vaguely operatic words.
Yeah.
Back to Elton John, who's singing great words, because unlike Freddie Mercury, I think John Deacon wrote a lot of those songs, but unlike that band, unlike Queen, a fantastic band, Elton John had a fantastic lyricist.
Which is actually, yes, he did.
By the way, the same reason the Grateful Dead were popular, I think, because of their lyricists. Because otherwise, they're just kind of a hillbilly band. Sorry, Uncle John. Anyway.
Yes, brilliant lyrics like, I will get by, I will survive.
First of all, that's not fair. But second of all, yeah, I get it. Hey, let me tell you, Grateful Dead, Kiss, all those bands had a disco album. So, you know, nobody has clean hands in this game. Sometimes you're just throwing shit out of the wall and seeing what sticks. Anyway, so back to Rocket Man. This is where Elton gets rich and out of control and super drugged up and but making a lot of money for a lot of people. Maybe not himself, as it turns out. The movie doesn't really talk about this, but at least I don't think so. I didn't get that impression. I was kind of waiting to come to a head. He just sort of drifted off from John Reed or fired him or something. But in real life, he ended up suing him, or actually there was a letter that he had written to John Reed or written to somebody, Elton John had, that an intrepid newsman or some crazy busybody guy who made it his life's mission to look through the rubbish bins of celebrities found this letter accusing John Reed of stealing his money and sold it to the Daily Mail, who published it. The Daily Mail is not the hero in any story. Anyway, ending up suing, and Elton John, or Reed, ended up paying Elton John like £3.5 million or something. But the entire lawsuit actually went at and did not go in Elton John's favor. None of this is interesting, and I should edit it out. Beep!
Well, I'm guessing that.
I assume Elton John made him upwards of $100 million.
Well, yeah. John Reed, between Elton John and Queen, he was doing all right. Anyway, we get to see the emotionally unstable Elton. We get to see his family visit from England to see his crazy mansion.
Well, again, you yada yada'd another fun music piece in which John Madden actually sings.
Do you have to remind me?
Well, oh, I don't know. I don't have it in front of me. Jason might.
What am I looking for?
What was the song that Elton and John Reed sang together while Elton was getting rich and learning how to spend money?
There was a lot of times where, like, later in the movie, he and Bernie sing a song together.
I can see the scenes in my head.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a fun scene.
Yeah.
And again, it did such a great job of showing the passage of time. You know, at the beginning of the song, John Reed is kind of seducing him with the lifestyle, and at the end, John Reed has control over his career.
Yes,
all through one song, where he's literally whining and dining him with his
honky
own money.
Cat.
Oh, yes. Honky Cat! Yes. Which is also a good song.
Mm-hmm. I would submit to you, I don't know that there are bad Elton John songs. There are just better Elton John songs than others.
I don't know. The one he sang in the studio where he eventually proposed to the producer, that one wasn't great.
Married, divorced, because it turns out, of course, it's a loveless marriage.
Imagine that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because I like although it ends, obviously, with him being somewhat heroic, or maybe not heroic, but he, you know, I guess I'm still standing, right? This is kind of a warts and all version of his story. He is not the hero in parts of the story, for sure.
No, he's not.
And I mean, I do like the sort of the final scene between Elton and Reed, where Elton accuses him of skimming money and wants to get rid of him. But Reed is like, do what you want to do. I'll still be collecting 20% long after you've killed yourself. Yeah.
It's so brutal.
Yeah. Oh, and I guess I had yada yada the whole thing about Sheila was cheating on his dad with this Fred guy. Who has like a pompadour haircut.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's all very uncomfortable and unsettling. And we get to see him. He was going on to a TV performance, and there was some sort of somebody got wind that he was gay or something. So he had to call and tell his mom he was gay, and he goes and visits his dad, and he's got half brothers. And his dad is very interested in the other kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's so affectionate and concerned about their welfare.
Yeah, but still not at all with Elton Hercules John. So that was, again, a good series of scenes. It's all part of his unraveling. Then we get to see the Madison Square Garden performance, sort of. I mean, you get to see the opening of it. And that's where we learn he bailed from the Madison Square Garden concert and goes into the therapy wearing his devil horns and like devil wings, I guess. And at the end of the story, you see all these characters from his life. Like his grandmother is encouraging still. And Elton says he basically no longer cares about his parents' opinions. And he doesn't feel controlled by John anymore. And he and Bernie are still great friends. And then he sees young Elton and gives that kid the hug he needed.
Yep. I saw that one coming, and it still got me both times I watched this movie.
Of course, yeah.
It got me. It worked.
Again, as I'm trying to explain, I have a whole section where I asked you guys about crying like a couple of years ago, and I saved the little clip of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't know whether it would actually turn into anything. I kind of excised it out of the thing because it was just a weird question. And as it turns out, my meds were a little wrong too. But like yesterday, this movie does the trick that makes you feel. It's a trick. I know it's a trick. I know coming into it's like the Sarah McLachlan ad about the eyes of an angel with the sad puppies. That is also a trick, and it's a trick that works. And, you know, I don't mind. I mean, I guess there are people that really enjoy going to movies and just having a good cry. I don't think I'll ever be that person. But, yeah, this movie was touching because of the music that I grew up with. So I'm already predisposed to liking the music, and then using the music in a way that tries to tug at your heartstrings. Ah, just the best. That's why yesterday worked. That's why this works. And at the end where he plays the I'm Still Standing song, not my favorite Elton John song, but the best song to end this with for sure. And the lame 80s video, not a great video, but hella stylish.
Yes, and a hilariously lighthearted way to end what was kind of a heavy story.
Oh yeah, yeah, and then it comes crashing down with oh yeah. By the way, in the text crawl at the end, and it's not really a crawl, I guess. It talks about oh yeah, he's been sober for almost 30 years. He's raised like what $500 million for AIDS. He's found the love of his life with David Furnish, and he and Bernie have been collaborating for 50 years. And they're going to raise their kids, or yeah, he and David are going to raise their kids. And Elton's kind of, he was in retirement during the filming of this movie, but I don't know if he's in retirement anymore.
Yeah. Oh, another song that I did not expect to land in this movie is Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me.
Yeah.
That's another song where I had a sense like that's not his song anymore. Like Almost Famous took Tiny Dancer and George Michael took Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. But again, the way they did it, the way they repackaged it for this movie, and when they used it, it really landed.
And I thought their use of Rocket Man was good, but it was not the boldest choice. Like, I think Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting, I think I'm Still Standing, you know, those were such great songs that the Rocket Man thing was more of like, that was like the interlude, the running theme throughout the whole thing. But I'm glad they didn't do it. I was afraid actually they were going to like land on Daniel, but they didn't, which is good. Good choice. I mean, I think they played strains of it.
You know, probably my favorite song that we haven't talked about in this movie is, And it's because the way they use it and the moment that it's in the movie, it's your song.
Yeah.
And that was when he and Bernie had kind of been put on Dick's payroll to write songs together, but they got kicked out of their apartment, so they were back. Yes. They were both living in with Elton John's mom, and they were still writing music together. And Bernie gave him, and his mom was kind of being belittling towards them both. And Bernie gave him the lyrics to the song, your song. And then he went upstairs to shave while Elton tried to work it out. And then when he started singing it, you know, it's a good song. But this is Jamie Bell's scene because he, you know, Taron Egerton does a really good job performing the song, and it sounds great, and it's really affecting. But the look on Jamie Bell's face while he's listening to him perform it told the whole story. You know, it you could just see on his face how he realized that he was part of something special, and he just heard something that was going to change both their lives. And without a word, he conveyed all of that message. I really enjoyed watching that, especially the second time, because I could appreciate it even more.
And again, much like the Almost Famous, you know, use Tiny Dancer in the best way ever, and of course George Michael owned the other song. They got your song. They actually managed to do a good job with it, even though that song is going to be forever known for Moulin Rouge.
It is.
Have you guys seen Moulin Rouge?
No.
I love Moulin Rouge. I drug Grandma to Moulin Rouge.
I think
You've sent me like three different copies of the soundtrack.
It's amazing. I mean, it's goofy as hell, but I think actually, Ewan McGregor singing your song is fucking great in that movie.
I think I saw that movie in the theater when I was in college. Yeah, I thought it was fine.
We'll talk about that also. Maybe episode 528. That movie, I still, partly because it's got like that, I think it's what, 1999, or probably it's that right, that sweet spot where it's got the EDM version of like the Can-Can song is fantastic. And anyway, I don't know. It's great. Okay, so, sorry, tangent over. Jason,
whatever happened to Maya? She had Ghetto Superstar, and then she had the song from Moulin Rouge with Pink and Christina Aguilera.
Oh yeah,
and then she just disappeared. Anywho,
so okay, Brother Jay, you got some bones to pick with this movie. Let's hear them.
We've already talked about him. There's nothing else. I mean, the movie opened kind of in this ethereal yellow brick road background music building up to the full open. That was probably, I was most excited then, and then it went downhill from there. So
I think The Bitch's Back was kind of a false start. I didn't like that.
I didn't like it either.
I mean, it was clever.
Again, I don't like little kids singing, and so it's a gimmick that didn't reach me on any level because I have a stone cold heart, and you know. So, actually, I wrote down, for fuck's sake, shut the kid up. So, yeah.
Did Jesse watch this movie?
Yes.
And did he like it?
He felt about the same way I did.
What's his relationship with Elton John?
I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
We haven't had an in-depth discussion, so.
I'm curious what his relationship is with Kiki D.
Didn't know who she was. So.
And by the way, do you know what else Bernie Taupin wrote? He didn't just collaborate with Elton John. He and Alice Cooper wrote From the Inside.
Oh, wow.
Which is a fucking great album, actually.
I can see that.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yep. Now, granted, it includes the song Millie and Billy, which includes the classic, it should be a Grammy Award winning lyric.
Oh, Millie.
Oh, Billy.
Criminally insane.
In harmony.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, it is. Anyway, sorry.
So The Bitch is Back. That's not my favorite performance in the movie, but I love how wild it is and how out of left field it comes so early in the movie. I thought it was a fantastic tone setter.
It certainly hits you. And it tells you what kind of movie. I think you're right.
So, Bernie Taupin actually had a recorded album as a singer.
Makes sense.
So, it was 1980.
Yeah, well.
Called He Who Rides the Tiger.
Okay, Bernie. You need to back off a little bit now.
Please be on Apple Music.
You know, actually, Bernie ended up making a decent amount of money, I think, publishing his lyrics in book form, which is good.
I mean, to remember a compilation that they put out. Was it in the 90s? And it was like the Elton John and Bernie Taupin collection. Oh. And that was the first time I was ever introduced to Bernie Taupin. And that also made me think that that's why it might have been around the same time that Elton started to be really public with his sexuality. So that may have been why I thought they were a couple.
I mean, from my childhood, I always remember, just as a fact that, I mean, no matter what kind of relationships Elton John was singing about, oh yeah, he may be singing like a duet with a lady about love and stuff, but oh yeah, the guy's gay as Christmas, and that's all right.
Like, Apple Music.
What's the most important, or what's the most popular song from that album per Apple
Music? How do I know?
Monkey on My Back, parentheses, The Last Run.
Hold on, you can't be riding a tiger with monkey on your back. it's just zoologically impossible.
The last track is The Horrors of Paris. I'm kind of intrigued.
Well, so let's get back to Moulin Rouge.
He's riding the tiger with a monkey on his back after being born on the 4th of July in Venezuela.
Perfect.
Approaching Armageddon with a lover's cross next to Blitz Babies and Valley Nights.
Oh, God.
For the love of barren desert and the horrors of Paris. This looks like gold. I just added and downloaded it to. Awesome possum.
Hot garbage. Have we talked about my love of Jethro Tull on this podcast? Probably not.
No.
Flute. Anyway.
Yeah, we don't have to. I just recently bought, because I don't have Apple Music, but so I spent probably 6 months worth of Apple Music subscription to just buy an album, a re-release of Too Old to Rock and Roll, Too Young to Die.
Who do you think is a bigger Jethro Tull fan, you or Lars Ulrich?
Must be Lars Ulrich, I'm guessing. I don't know what's the I'm not a, I mean, I know bigger Jethro Tull fans. I just happen to, there's a couple albums, and again, we talked about this before. I don't listen to music the way I did when I was young, where you get an album, it's kind of a rare thing, you know? I mean, you don't have a million albums. So when you get a new album, you listen to the whole thing. I mean, maybe I'm going to put it on a cassette, and maybe I'll just play the first 3 songs for the next 6 months. But eventually, I'll get the rest of the songs. There'll be something that happens. And I'll look at the liner notes. If there's lyrics, I'll pour over the lyrics. This is before we had everything available, all the lyrics available online, all the songs available online, 6 different versions of online. You know, you just kind of had to appreciate what you had. And I think, and again, this is just an old man talking, but you know, now that we have everything, we don't appreciate anything. There, I said it.
It's hard to describe the phenomenon of everybody having to buy the Lithium CD single because they included the entire lyrics to the Nevermind album. And that was the only way to get them because the lyrics as sung were so unintelligible.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, nearly, yeah. And again, because a lot of the, especially like Smells Like Teen Spirit and stuff, he just used words that rhymed.
Yeah. As it turns out.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, that really is what he's saying.
Yeah. And it don't make no sense at all. But yeah. Anyway, but it doesn't matter because we've been listening. Oh, anyway, we go on and on about Nirvana. We've already had a whole Nirvana conversation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, also, just to circle back, Lars Ulrich, it's because Metallica was so popular, they created the Grammy for heavy metal music.
Yes.
And Metallica lost twice, I think, to Jethro Tull.
Well, no, they only lost, they lost, yes, they lost, what is it? Is it the Black Album? Lost to, maybe Ride the Lightning. Lost to Crest of the Nave by Jethro Tull. Which is, by the way, Crest of the Nave is a great album. It's just not heavy metal. It's for sure rock, but it's not heavy metal. Yeah. Turns out Lars actually might be even more judgy and passionate than Brother Jay.
Oh, without a doubt.
Did you see Monster, the Metallica documentary, where they all went to therapy together?
Why would I?
Oh, no. It's
went to therapy together. That's...
No, yeah, they actually had a they went to group therapy, couples therapy, like relationship counseling, all four of them together. It's funny because as it turns, you actually meet Lars Ulrich's dad. And you're like, oh shit! No wonder he's a weirdo. His dad is an uber weirdo. So no, Lars Ulrich wasn't having a good '80s where he lost a Grammy to Jethro Tull, and Napster stole his music, and he didn't appreciate that. And came off as a pompous asshole because of it.
Fire bad.
Yeah, it's very funny.
You know what else isn't rock?
What?
Steely fucking Dan.
Yeah, okay, you know what else is not rock? Is Imagine Dragons. And yet they have like four of the top 10 rock songs of the 2010s.
I have their songs in Beat Saber.
No, I like Imagine Dragons. But there's a certain amount of rapidy rapness that, to me, takes them out of the pure rock category. Like, I want my rock stripped out. I want Montrose's first album. That's all I want from a rock song.
I think rock is just now just this big group term. I don't think it means anything anymore.
Again, there's so many little divisions. Like, there's not just heavy metal. There's like death metal, speed metal, black metal. There's neo metal. It's like there's so many little tiny
new metal,
whatever.
New,
okay.
Uh oh.
Oh man. The ghost of Chester Bennington came for Eric over neo metal.
Somebody's trying to download a movie.
Must be.
Uh-oh. Wonder how long it'll take him to notice that we're gone.
I wonder, are we gone? Or is he gone?
Well, we're talking to each other, so...
Yeah, but from his perspective. You think we're the ones who are frozen?
That's probably a fair point. Should I text him?
Where'd you go? I miss you so... It's been forever since you've been home.
Oh, Lord. Oh, well, now he's gone.
I'm bummed you didn't like this movie.
I didn't hate it. I think I probably will need to go back and rewatch it at a later date, further away from yesterday.
Watch Bohemian Rhapsody and then watch Rocket Man again.
By the way, I know the raccoon commercial to which you speak, and I have laughed several times.
I think that's also like in an opening scene in Ratatouille.
Nah, I've not seen Ratatouille, so I'll...
Oh, right. Ratatouille is actually really fun.
Oh, dear. That is bad. Ouch.
Oh, no. Oh, yikes.
That's a bad thing.
Man, it's not often you get the blue screen of death and the unhappy face.
Was that a computer or a tablet?
That's an HP monitor.
Oh.
I really love Max.
I love them, too. I just wish they weren't anywhere near as expensive as they are. We were just bullshitting. We weren't, I mean, we didn't do any housekeeping or anything, but.
We didn't do our bits.
This is a B minus C plus kind of movie for me. It is okay. I told Brother Drew in the the ether when you were gone for a few moments here that I probably will give this a couple months and go back and watch it clean, as it were, without the influence arcing over of yesterday. And he suggested I watch Bohemian Rhapsody first because the taste of garbage will elevate this. So,
absolutely worth it. I want to watch it again. No, this is such a fun movie. Such great performances. I was rewarded even more watching it the second time. I actually started it pretty late at night the other night just because I wanted to get it going. And I wound up watching so much of it that I had to stop even though I wanted to watch more. I watched all the way through from the beginning through the troubadour scene. And then had to pull the plug because I had to work the next day. So I think this is a very engaging movie. It's really fun. I do like musicals, so this one's right up my alley. It was so creative. And I love when good songs are reimagined in really creative ways. And this movie does that with some fantastic songs. And I appreciated just about everything in this movie.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey, Joe, hey.